Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning, and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back for hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. We're glad you're here. Thank you for tuning in. If you've got a question, get in that call. In the call queue right now, here's the number, 206-421-5757. We were talking with Rob about whey protein, and you had an answer for that, what the best kind was for him, Dr.
Yeah,
Mixon?
Whey protein... how do I answer this properly? Whey protein basically comes from a side effect of making cheese. And so cheese factories make their cheese, and the whey is a byproduct. It's the protein left over. And they sell it in 50-pound bags to companies that then hydrolyze it and put it in, you know, 2-pound buckets. And each of those little containers that you buy the hydrolyzed whey protein cost you as much as the whole 50-pound bag that they bought it from. There are people who make organic cheeses, and these have to come from grass-fed cows that are hormone-free and basically pesticide-free. So these are specialized. They tend to cost more, because most of the milk is produced by cows that are fed growth hormones and, you know, peptides and so on, trying to get them to kick out lots and lots and lots of milk, because they sell the milk by the pound.
I only drink raw milk.
Okay.
And have been for years, and through a good dairy, it's all grass and everything. So,
yep.
Not homogenized, not pasteurized, and
okay.
But he's not making whey.
No, because if he makes cheese, that's where they get the whey.
Right.
And then they take the whey and they hydrolyze it and, you know, put a little bit of sweetener in it and sell it to you as whey.
Well, the reason I asked this is because I think we had a conversation a week or so ago, and collagen got brought into the discussion and proteins. And you had brought up
The hydrolyzed whey. Sure.
Right.
And that is a good way to get the amino acids that your own body will then make the proteins you need out of that. When you swallow collagen from a cow or a pig, it's a different collagen than your own body would make. Human collagens are different than the animal collagens, okay? So Your body's going to break them down. You're going to rip them apart, turn them into the free amino acids, and then you're going to use those amino acids to make your own collagen, your own muscle, your own proteins. So it's very efficient to buy pre-hydrolyzed whey or soy protein, so that now you no longer have a protein. You only have the free amino acids. They're absorbed very quickly through your gut, and your body can use them to make your own collagens. And
okay, so keyword is pre-hydrolyzed,
and
100% organic. So
yeah, and it's sold as free amino acids. That's the phrase you're looking for. Free amino acids.
Okay? And buy it in 5-gallon buckets, not buy the 32-ounce jug.
That's right. You got it.
All right. Okay. Well, great. Thanks again for taking my call. Appreciate it. Have a
you're
wonderful
welcome,
weekend.
Sir.
Talk to
Take
you again.
Care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rob. Headed not too far away to beautiful Bellevue, and we have a caller there. Daniel, good morning. Welcome.
Hello, hey, Daniel.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to share, I heard the caller about the rapamycin and blood levels, and I wanted to share my recent experience. And I'm just trying to provide data for everyone because this is all new. I'm not trying to start a controversy or curveball or anything. So I did the compounding and I got that undetectable result. I've called in before about this. Mm-hmm. And then just out of frustration or whatever, curiosity, I took a double dose, so it'd be 12 milligram. And I added grapefruit and olive oil, and it was the double capsules. I could clearly see there was one capsule inside another capsule, and that also was undetectable.
Yep.
So I ended up getting a rapamycin prescription from another doctor, and I could have gone any pharmacy, Rite Aid, wherever.
Sure.
I chose CVS just because of cost. And I went into LabCorp Issaquah, and my result came back 12.6, I believe.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I was really happy to see that. The pharmacist, I said, is this enteric coated? And she said, it's not enteric coated. She said, sealed coated. Which I guess is similar. I don't really, I haven't heard of seal coated before, but.
Neither have I.
And then, yeah, that's what the pharmacist called it. And then, I also, interesting, their lab, their online lab process was down that day, so they were only accepting hard copy PDF for the actual lab draw. So they were really behind. So, my lab draw actually was 3 hours after I had taken it.
Wow.
Which I also found interesting.
Yes, because in the research papers, they're showing peak blood levels within about 15 or 20 minutes, and then a very, very rapid decline, 90-some percent of it being gone within an hour or two. So that's...
Yeah.
You know, so three hours later, for you to still have one of 12, that doesn't fit anything that's in the published literature either. It's just in the opposite direction. So,
yeah.
I'm not quite sure what to make of
that. I know Caberline, and you were saying we weren't sure what lab he used, but he'd said he'd come back 22, I think, after a couple hours. I did a repeat a week later and I had not taken it. And so that was undetectable. I just wanted to see what my trough was.
Uh-huh.
My guess was if I had tested earlier, like an hour and a half or 2 hours, maybe it would have been higher, like 20, but that's purely a guess. I don't know.
You don't know unless you measure. Yeah, last time I sat down with Matt was, almost 2 years ago. And that was before he left the UW. He was still at the University of Washington and using their laboratory facilities. And then he and another fellow went off and started their own company. And were trying to run the $400,000 dog study. And then, or the 400,000 dog study, not dollars.
Okay, I was,
And then they ran out of money. Wow. So I don't know what they're doing now. So I had to get back in touch with him and see where he's getting his labs now and what his values are and how much he's taking. Because, like I said,
I think he said 8 milligrams on his YouTube.
Yeah, but his YouTube's, you have to look and see which one and when they were produced.
It was pretty recent, I think.
Okay, because he's got a variety of YouTube screens out there that go back several years. But anyway, yeah, I need to get back in contact with him, visit with him a bit, and see if we can find a place where everybody can get consistent results. And we may just have to go to the Pfizer version, which is unfortunately, instead of, you know, a couple of $100 a month, it's a few $1,000 a month. But
well, that's the other interesting thing. I was it was only like $30, and my insurance surprisingly actually covered it, so it was only like $15 for like a month's supply, which is really nice.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's what someone else said of me.
Yeah. Okay.
But I know other people have taken. Sorry, I keep cutting you off. I know other people have done the, you know, prescription rapamycin and gone to LabCorp and had results between 8 and 20. I'm aware of other people that have done that. And then I guess the last interesting thing I will say to even make it more confusing, at least for me, when I took the compounding one, I definitely noticed increased, you know, improved urination. I would definitely feel very good on the day I would take it. And I feel like I was never getting sick. And with the prescription one that I've been taking, I haven't really been feeling those three things as much, or if at all.
Yeah.
So I almost felt better on the compounding one, even though it's undetectable. So that's, I would prefer to take one that's detectable, but that's confusing to me.
Well, it is. And I don't know why, because, you know, when I give people the ones and we run their tests, and frankly, I've stopped doing the tests because I wasn't getting any results anyway, but the people are getting physiologic changes. You know, I'm seeing the change in blood sugar. I'm seeing the change in cholesterol. I'm seeing the improved urination. We're getting a very clear physiologic effect, and yet we're not getting detectable blood levels. And I'm not sure why. So.
And are you saying worsening blood sugar and cholesterol?
Yeah, generally, you know, rapamycin raises cholesterol and blood sugar in almost everybody. And in fact, it's sometimes described as a pseudo diabetes because the sugars will sometimes go up quite significantly. And yet the people are not getting any of the symptoms or physiologic changes of diabetes. But for some reason, cholesterol and blood sugar almost always go up with rapamycin. And we're seeing that.
Yeah.
So we're seeing those changes in the patients, and yet we're getting non-detectable blood levels. So two conflicting things, not able to measure it in the blood, but we are measuring in the blood all the side effects that come with it. So
yeah, so the prescription one, I do feel like I get increased mouth sores, and also my insulin or my blood sugar seemed to increase, but I didn't get either of those with the compounding. So that was another interesting thing.
Yep.
It kind of... Yeah, I mean, I felt more positive results with the compounding, and I got more expected negative results with the prescription. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know I made it.
Okay. Thank you for the call. I greatly appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We're glad you're here on this Saturday morning. We are live in the studio. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Michael Gilbert. And we're going to talk about eye health in just a moment with Elizabeth and Robert. We have you on the line as well. Here's the number so that you can get your questions answered and get into the call queue. Don't do it at the end of the show. Do it right now. 206-421-5757. We'll be right back. Stay there.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything started into hum. Still, it's a real good bet. The best is yet to come.
Oh, Dr. Mixon, one of your songs. You chose this one, I know. Oh, Leading Edge Medicine, back with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Michael Gilbert of Northwest Vision Institute. The eye questions have it today. We've got some eye questions. And Elizabeth from Bremerton is going to ask you about
something. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Well, good morning. Welcome.
Happy Saturday.
To you. Love the music. Hey, I have a couple topics I'd like to talk about. About 5 years ago, with an eye exam, the doctor said he saw, I don't remember the technical term, but what he referred to as a mole on the back of my eye.
Okay.
Could you describe that and what are the concerns that could happen in the future with it?
Sure. So it's called a nevus, a pigmented nevus. And we can see them in the retina or the choroid, which underlies the retina. And any nevus anywhere in the body has a very small statistical malignancy risk, so you want to watch them. But a pigment on your arm or anywhere else in your body, you can watch. The difference between a pigment in the retina exam is that only the ophthalmologist is going to be able to see that. And so you can monitor the one that's on your forearm. You glance at it every day. But the one that's in your eye particularly is one that asks you to have an annual eye exam to make sure it's not changing. And the vast majority don't. The malignant potential is extremely small. But nonetheless, you want to have that checked on a periodic basis. Just and we tend to take a digital picture of it so that you can see what's back there, and we can have a digital image to compare to with in future exams, so that we know exactly. And one of the techniques that you can't put a ruler next to it, but there are blood vessels in the retina, so we can kind of map out exactly where those. Where the exact size relative to the other anatomy. And if it shows the slightest change, then there are some imaging technologies where we can look at the thickness and make sure that there's nothing that might need to be treated. In the rare situation where it's changing, you can have a malignancy. A choroidal nevus can be actually a melanoma, for instance. And so that can be treated. In, 30 years ago, when I started training, we would sacrifice the eye to protect the body against a malignancy in the eye.
Wow.
But now, if a malignancy is detected, we can put radioactive plaques right on the tumor, and it will shrink that up and save the eye. It's pretty amazing.
Interesting. Yes, that
but
is
the
amazing.
Likelihood of malignant potential is extremely low, and just having your eye exam on an annual basis so that they can take a quick look back there and say, yep, same size as it was before, no malignant appearance.
Thank you so much for explaining the outtake.
Of course.
Money to have the digital pictures of it. A couple more questions. A couple years ago, I heard the two of you talk on the show about the future in prescription eye drops that you foresaw or heard or whatever to improve your sight. Have you any updates on that?
No, that's okay. Slow progress in that area.
Okay.
I think that the most interesting is eventually I think we'll be able to dissolve cataracts. Right now I love doing cataract surgery and what we're able to achieve by doing it. But I think long term we'll be able to prevent cataracts and rejuvenate the natural lens. But is that going to be in my lifetime? No, there's a whole list of things that I think may not happen okay. within my lifetime, but I'm looking for them.
Okay. I got two more subjects, if I may.
Sure.
Great.
My brother is 63. We have a family history of glaucoma from our mother. He's had it for almost 30 years now.
I'm sorry, which relative?
Brother,
got
mother.
It.
Mother.
Highest statistical risk is siblings.
Yeah.
So, definitely that annual eye exam.
Yeah, which I do. He's had glaucoma for 30 years now, and he's had to do the stents in both eyes.
Okay.
And his eyes are always irritated, and in the last 6 months, he's had to do 5 eye surgeries. The pressure has gone up and down between as low as 3 or 5 and up to 30. And he tells me the doctor says his eyes will just always be irritated. They're really, really bad. Is there anything else that can be done for him?
So I guess we'd have to try and the first question is why? Is he on drops as well as surgery?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So it could be the drops, and depending on what surgery, there are some glaucoma surgeries where there's actually an external drainage device that is implanted, and that can structurally, you know, if that is the kind of stent that he had, that makes some anatomical changes, and that might be the discomfort, or it could be the prescription drops. It turns out that if many of the patients who have problems with the prescription glaucoma drops, they can be made by custom pharmacy without preservatives or with adjusting the pH. So if it's surgical, then I'd have to take a look and see what the surgical anatomical disruption is. But if it's related to the prescription drops, sometimes custom pharmacy can create formulations using the same prescription molecules, but in a different vehicle that's more comfortable. So that's certainly a possibility.
Okay.
It also is true that the glaucoma drugs often tend to be damaging to the meibomian gland system, which is the primary lubrication mechanism of the eye. So sometimes just treating the glands that produce the lubricating tears helps some of the foreign body sensation that comes with those glaucoma drops.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Of course.
One last question, and it might be more to Dr.
The Mixon, boss?
But I'm not sure.
Right. We'll find out.
It has to do with tooth resorption. And I kind of...
Somewhat?
Direct tooth resorption.
Okay. Tooth resorption?
Your voice is fluctuating with the connection.
The phone lines have been a little sticky today.
She got it correctly. Tooth resorption.
Okay. Tooth.
Tooth resorption. Tooth.
Okay.
Like in your mouth. Your
yes.
T-O-O-T-H.
Okay.
All right. And what about it?
Any? Just wondering what all you know about it. What causes it? My dentist says they don't know what causes it. It could be a virus. Just concerned on anything that you might know about it.
Huh. A tooth resorption, as though you had an adult tooth and somehow it dissolved and went away?
He's describing the interior structure of it is collapsing, that the body's fighting against it. He says sometimes it can create a bone in the place of it. I was just wondering what all you'd know about it, if anything.
Nothing.
All right. Okay.
This is really way, way out of my field. Yeah, I'm not a dentist, and B, I've never had a patient complain of that in my life, so I've had no occasion to do any research on it. So, sorry. Can't help you with that one, dear.
Thank you. I was just curious on if you knew anything about the viruses that might be. But thank you all. I appreciate you being there.
Okay, have a good thank day. You. Bye-bye, dear.
Thank you for the call, Elizabeth. We will take a break, and we will be back, and we have room for more phone calls like yours. Here's the number. It's 206-421-5757 to get through today with your questions for Dr. Mixon, or if you've got a concern about your eye health or someone in your family with something that they're doing with their eyes, glaucoma, maybe cataracts, or perhaps just their vision isn't doing so well. What is RLE all about? Give us a call, 206-421-5757. Dr. Michael Gilbert is here, and we will be right back. Stay there. Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. So glad that you've tuned in. I hope you too have a smile on your face, as well as I do.
On a beautiful day.
Oh yes, it's a gorgeous day.
Except that we're in a dark room with walls painted black.
We are, but we have great imaginations. We've been outside.
I think it is kind of a forest green, but it's a dark forest indeed.
Yeah, it's a dark forest.
And when lights hit it, it may get more green.
Well, actually, the idea of the lights.
But I'm brown, red, green, so I'll never know.
Now, the idea of the dark walls is that it's supposed to fade out and be invisible on the camera.
Yes.
So that you see us as we're sitting there and we're talking, but the background just disappears.
There you go.
So you see nothing.
Don't wear a dark shirt.
That's right. Otherwise, it just looks like Dr. Mixon's floating head.
Just like a head.
The floating head. All right. We're going to get to our calls in just a moment, and we have room for you as well. 206-421-5757. Our show, Leading Edge Medicine, has been on the air for over 25 years. Now over 26. Is that right, Dr. Mixon?
1998, actually, is when we started the show.
Okay. Many years ago. And one of the things that has been consistent so far, and we still have it, is that free health analysis appointment. Now, it may not be here. We've talked about this. Yep. We may change some things.
Dr. Umat wants to get rid of it.
That's right. But we can still get you in, and because we want you to be a patient of longevity. When you call up on the air and you say, hey, I'm a patient.
Yes.
This is a good thing. Yeah. And that's our goal, to get you to be serious about your health, to want to make changes, to want to be, what are those words?
Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier.
Happier. Yes. And the first step in doing that, of course, is to come to one of our clinics. We have three: Linwood, Tacoma, and our brand new beautiful facilities here in Kirkland. And we would love to have you meet our staff and take just a couple of tests. That is free. It's a in-body test and a blood test. Find out what life has done to you so far. You give us some history of your past, and we'll see if you'll take a bigger blood panel test, which will give you so much information.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that Dr. Umat is talking about getting rid of the free aspect is, you know, we can do the in-body and the A1C, looking at your average blood sugar. But really, to do a great job, to really know the details of what we need to do for you, we need that full panel. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's a 70-page printout, and it is indeed a bargain. I mean, it's about $2,500 worth of lab work that we get for you for $600, for $595. Yeah. So, you know, it's a super-duper bargain. But it's the information we really need. And so about 75% of the people that come for the free in-body actually go ahead and buy the full panel. Mm-hmm. Because that one lets us to test a whole lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, so many things.
That will give us a detailed picture of what life has done to you thus far and what it's going to take to help us turn that around and make you stronger and faster and leaner and smarter than you were when you came in the door the first time. And so the purpose of longevity is not to let you fall apart on schedule.
No.
You know, and that's what normal is. Normal just means that you're falling apart on schedule. You're getting slower and fatter and weaker and dumber at the same rate as everybody else your age. And it may be normal, but that doesn't make it good.
No.
Okay. And so what we want is to have you be abnormal. I want you stronger than most people your age. I want you faster. I want you leaner. I want you smarter. I want you having a happier, more robust life than 99% of the people in America. Mm-hmm. I want to put you in that top 1%. Okay, I want to make you a 1%er, whether your income is up there or not. I want you physically and mentally in the top 1% of the country, mm-hmm. because I want you happier than 99% of the country.
So absolutely.
That's the goal of having you come to longevity, okay, is to actually improve your life, let us address those things in your life that are actually doing the damage. Let's reverse them. Let's not wait till you have your heart disease and then try to treat it, or wait till you find that you have significant cognitive problems and try to treat them. It's a lot more efficient to prevent these problems than to let you get them and then try to work on them.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we don't really have a healthcare system. We have a disease management system.
Mm-hmm.
The entire healthcare system, other than a few places like longevity, are directed to treating diseases after they occur.
Mm.
And some people refer to us as an anti-aging clinic. I don't like that because I can't make you an hour younger. You've lived how many hours you've
right.
lived.
That's true.
I don't
yes.
warp space and time. But we are the ultimate preventive medicine clinic. Our desire is to not let you get demented, to not let you get your heart disease, to not let you have your stroke, to not let you get osteoporosis, and not let you get the degenerative arthritis. If you've got those things, we'll try to turn it around for you. But that's tougher than having you come in before you've got the problems.
Yeah.
So I would love it if you and your children and your nieces and nephews come see us before you're at death's door,
mm-hmm.
and let us prevent problems. Let us help you be stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier than 99% of America.
Yes.
That's our goal. That's what Longevity Medical Clinic is all about.
Absolutely. Just like one of our callers said earlier, boy, I've been a patient with Dr. Mixon for years, but I wish I would have started 10 years ago.
That's
you know,
right.
would have found you a lot
that's
longer.
Right.
And that's probably what you hear with a lot of people that start later. But it's never too late.
Yes.
We want to get you in. Here is that number to call and take advantage of the free health analysis. We want you to meet the staff and find out what you can do to live a longer, healthier life. 866-86-YOUNG is the number for Longevity Medical Clinics. 866-86-YOUNG. And you can also go on our website, which is lmclinic.com, and you'll get some more information there. You can make your own appointment, find the day, the time, and the clinic that works best for your busy schedule. That's lmclinic.com. All right. We hope to see you here. We're going to go not too far away, right over to Seattle. We have Robert on the line to talk to the doctors. Hi there, Robert.
Hello, Robert.
Morning, Robert.
Hello, I have a question about Ozempic. You had a discussion this morning about Ozempic.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We're helping with fat around internal organs. I was told years ago that I have a fatty liver.
Mm-hmm.
Never done anything about it. I'm curious whether Ozempic would handle that, if that's the best route to handle fat from internal organs, or is exercise the best route? So on this Ozempic thing, is it okay? I'm a thin person. Could thin people use it? Do you yourself use it? And do you think exercise might be better for removing that fat?
My visceral fat is less than half the normal fat in typical Americans. So I don't use the semaglutide myself now. I have used it a little bit in the past just because I wanted to know about the side effects. I wanted to see what it did with my appetite and so on. But I only took it about 3 weeks just to be able to say, okay, now I've experienced what my patients are experiencing.
Mm.
So because I don't have much visceral fat, I have that measured every time I go see Dr. Umat. She is my doctor. Okay, so I get on that InBody and we check the muscle and the fat in my arms, my legs, and my torso. I think that once you're at already lean, assuming you're not what we call a skinny fat, because when we do the InBody test, we find some people actually have increased amounts of body fat compared to their muscle mass. Especially older people are often losing muscle. And so the ratio of muscle to fat can actually be in an unhealthy way without you looking like you're overweight. So it is one of those things that we check on everybody, because we do find some people whose muscle mass is actually low enough that they are relatively high on body fat compared to their muscle. So we'd like to avoid that. So for them, raising their anabolic hormone load, getting their testosterone, dehydroepiandrosterone, pregnenolone, and their thyroid levels up where they ought to be, getting them on a good exercise program, both resistance and aerobic activity, so that we lay down a fair bit of muscle and get that ratio of muscle to fat up, can be a real benefit for them.
Okay, so it sounds like I would skip on the Ozempic. The second question I have, I'll just do the exercise and see how that works.
All right.
Okay, stay right there for us.
Okay, now you hear the music. We got to go away for a minute, but we'll be back.
Yeah, we're going to go to Hawaii, though, but we'll be back. Hawaii 5-0. Yes, Robert, you stay right there, and we have time for at least one or two other calls, perhaps 206-421-5757. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so lonely.
Oh, today, Leading Edge Medicine, mellowing out a little bit with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Michael Gilbert. We're talking with Robert on the line about the fatty liver and other things to do for that.
Right. And the question, of course, is, do you have a history of alcohol abuse?
Maybe 30 years ago.
Okay. Because that's the single biggest cause of fatty liver disease, is alcoholic fatty liver. There is a non-alcoholic fatty liver, but it is more common in people that are overweight. And from what you're describing, you sound like you're pretty lean. So that's, you know, not something we normally see. Go ahead.
I guess let me move on to my second question here, because I'm interested in it. I'm concerned about inflammation. I think I've got a bit of inflammation going. I know I do. Mm-hmm. The only thing I found that helps my knees, for example, is a little supplement. I take a turmeric curcumin bioperine supplement.
Okay.
It's combined. I just have a Prevnar 20 shot. I'm going to wait 7 and 10 days, and then I'm going to start taking rapamycin. I have heard a lot, lately on the internet, about spermidine. I don't know if that does much for inflammation, but my other concern is taking the rapamycin. I've also heard whispers about maybe that's not so good for keeping muscles.
Well, I use my rapamycin regularly, and I'm having no decrease in muscle mass whatsoever. In fact, I am consistently getting stronger as I exercise. So, you know, I have heard that in theory it might, but I'm certainly not seeing it, at least in my own case. So, you know, a year or two ago, I started doing 50 push-ups each morning after I shaved, and then I went up to 55, and then I went to 60, and, you know, now I'm between 65 and 70 each morning before I go out for my morning exercise. So I'm clearly getting stronger over time, and yet I'm using my rapamycin. Of course, I'm also keeping my anabolic hormone load in the mid-range of a healthy 20 to 25-year-old. Which, you know, gives me a real metabolic advantage. And that is, I think, is as important as lifestyle. And if your body doesn't have the tools that it needs to take advantage of what you're doing, you're working at a real disadvantage. So,
what do you think of spermidine?
Spermidine is not much of an anti-inflammatory, but it really is good at helping cellular turnover. So, you know, the apoptosis and the autophagocytosis is enhanced with spermidine. So,
and rapamycin does that also, right?
Yeah, 500 milligrams a day of spermidine. Rapamycin does, and mm-hmm. so does metformin. Metformin is also a SIRT1 inhibitor, which mm-hmm. is kind of interesting.
Yeah, you know, I kind of wish you'd break out the male hormone stack, the testosterone, progesterone, as its own track instead of the complete program. I'd really be interested in that if you ever did that.
Well, the problem is that the hormones are 8 different hormones we measure every 3 months.
Right.
And what we give you is depending on what you as an individual need. So, you know, I don't know how you can't have a standard because human beings are different. Men, women, different ages, different lifestyles, different genetics. So the only real way to tell you what we need to do for you is to evaluate you, run your blood tests, get your history, start supplementing your hormone load, and then bring you back and check it again and make alterations and check it again and make alterations. You know, after 27, 28 years, I'm still getting my hormones checked about every 3 months and making modest alterations over time because I'm getting older. And so, you know, I have times when I have a relatively sedentary lifestyle. I have times when I'm more active. I have times when I'm coasting with no stress in my life and times when I'm under stress. And all of those things alter the feedback loops in your body. And the only way to really keep things where they ought to be is to continuously measure. And to continuously measure means putting you on an ongoing program where we keep bringing you back and doing your blood tests again and altering your doses.
But you couldn't do that with the male hormone stack, huh? Just stick to that instead of the diet and the other stuff?
I guess we could just do a hormone program. It would be incomplete. But, you know, if you're not worried about what's going on in your gut, although that does have an impact on your dementia, your heart disease, your diabetes, your bone loss, and so on. So, you know, we try to be as comprehensive as we possibly can. And that's the goal.
So, well, I just know from checking around, I know that your program is the most value-oriented one, as far as I can tell. You have a very good price point compared to other people who are charging up to $100,000.
Oh, yes. We are the least expensive comprehensive program in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
yeah, I think you are.
It would be nice if we could do it for free, but I'm not rich. So I can't afford to pay for the privilege of caring for people. But it is cost versus what you're getting. I think we are the most cost-effective program in the United States today.
Yep.
So
I think so. Okay, well, thanks for answering those questions. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, sir. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, doctors, one last call. Let's see what we can do with Joe calling in from Parkland. Hi, Joe.
Hey, good afternoon. My question is about sinus tachycardia. Is there anything that could be done naturally to reverse new sinus tachycardia, or is it something that's going to require a part of the heart to be killed with ablation?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, sinus tachycardia just means that your heart rate is faster than it is supposed to be. One of Dr. Mixon's aphorisms, first diagnosis, then therapy.
Right. Well, I have had it diagnosed by a cardiologist. So.
Okay, so what is the underlying cause? Why is your heart running fast?
They just diagnosed me with sinus tachycardia after an EKG readout. So yeah, that's all the further it got.
And that's my point. You see, that's a symptom. The symptom is your heart is beating fast. The question that needs to be asked is, why is your heart beating fast? What's the underlying pathology? Because that's what we need to discover and fix. Okay. So it's like saying, I've got a pain in my left hip. Fine, that's the symptom. Why do you have a pain in your left hip? You know, a lot of different things could do that. And so when I say diagnosis, I'm not saying what symptom complex. I'm saying what is the underlying pathology? What's going on in your electrical conduction system of your heart to cause it to beat fast? That's what we need to address.
And how would one diagnose that?
Well, we need to take a whole look and see what else is going on in your body. You know, are you developing high blood pressure or low blood pressure? What is your endocrine support? What is your thyroid level? You know, for instance, if you're running hyperthyroidism, that explains why your heart is beating faster. Your metabolism is too fast. We need to damp down your thyroid function. So okay. A whole lot of different reasons. Unfortunately, we've got about 60 seconds left. They're going to throw us off the air. I've only paid for 4 hours today. But give us a call back early next week. We'll do a little more history with you and see if we can find out or at least get some hints as to why you might have sinus tach, okay? Talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you so much for the call, Joe. That's it for the show. Dr. Michael Gilbert, thank you for coming in.
Oh, always a fun day.
Yes. Always good to have you in. Talk to the folks about the eye issues. If you'd like to reach Dr. Gilbert and his team, contact him at Northwest Vision Institute. That number is 425-450-2020. All right. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll be back with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat live in the studio next week right here. Thank you for listening.